As a social worker, some of my work was being a therapist with young children. I especially liked it. I found that when children, like adults, know that others feel as they do, when they learn that their feelings have a name and that they can get help learning how to deal with them, they feel such relief. A little help can go a long way with a young child. I wanted to write simple books for children to help them and their parents understand and manage their feelings. A visit to Rachel's children helped me see how important it could be to help children understand more about the most difficult situation in life, the death of a parent. I wrote later in a foreword to such a book, "A child most needs to know that happiness will continue to be possible and was not buried with the dead." When I see Abby, 8, and Joshua, 4, I'm struck at once by the echoes of Rachel's face in Abby's, by Joshua's continued puzzled and distraught look, as well as by their frank beauty. I'm full of love for their mother, my dead friend. Also, my own mothering has been unused these past days with Lucy and Matt at their father's. But Abby's hair is all gone, cut. The hair that Rachel hadn't cut since she was born. The hair I have brought ivory plastic barrettes for. But how sweet Abby looks, how like Rachel when her hair was gone and growing back. Abby and I have been talking of Rachel. "How did you meet?" Abby asked, and I've told her of our day-apart birthdays, how people said we looked alike. Joshua almost shouts, "My mommy's dead!" Peter, Rachel's husband, with the children, picked me up from where I'm staying and is driving us to their house, Rachel's house, a century-old farm set in the flinty New Hampshire earth. When we arrive and get out of the car, they take me to see their neighbor's new foal. The foal nuzzles the mother horse's teat, and it sprays milk onto the foal's small foot. And I think of my own breast milk for my babies, and of Rachel nursing Abby, then Joshua, with whom a pain in her breast became so intense that she went to her doctor, and then her diagnosis came. Inside the farmhouse, Joshua is full of comments about bad boys and girls, worries about things happening. He behaves aggressively toward his sister, his father, and me. Abby has given me a headband she made in camp. "I was going to give it to Linda," her father's girlfriend, "but when I heard you were here, I decided to give it to you." I'm touched. At first, I put it in my purse because it is a little too small for me, but then I take it out and wear it anyway for the rest of this special evening. I say, "I have presents for you both, too, in my present bag." Joshua says, "I love presents." Abby and I smile a lot at each other. When we were in the car, I craned around to see her and once reached behind me to squeeze her ankle. They open the presents. Joshua's pleased with his crayons and the sharpener, and Abby says, precisely like a mother, "You have to hold it up like this, Joshy, or the stuff gets out. I had one like this." She opens one book, the sequel to A Wrinkle in Time, which somehow I knew she'd liked. Then the ivory plastic barrettes, and ooh, a pleasure. Then The Long Winter. She's pleased. Joshua begins to use his crayons, but his father wants him to come outside again for photographs. We all go out, but he cries and threatens to break up all the crayons and rip up paper. He'd said in the car, "Daddy, why when I say something, then you say something right after, and I don't get to finish anything saying it?" And he muttered threats about how he'll tear something up if. I'm admiring to myself Peter's respectful rejoinder about why this happens. He tells Joshua to speak up when he gets interrupted by saying, "Excuse me, but I wasn't finished talking." Now, however, Peter says, "Put your head up and smile," and counts 1, 2, 3. Up comes Joshua's head, his face scowling. He's crying. He rubs his fists in his eyes, but he poses as instructed for our photograph. I rub Joshua's back, say, "I'll draw a picture for him." Back inside the house, he tells me that he can't do it right and nearly cries when the paper slips to the floor. Peter sends him upstairs until he can act nicely. He returns after a few moments. I ask to help him draw, and he likes that. He does a rainbow and about 7 perfect stars. He signs his name, the letters all backward, and brings it to the table, saying, "I drew this picture for all of you, so no one will be mean to me anymore." I sit next to him at dinner, which is volcano eggs, soft poached. He's going to show me the volcano eruption as he plunges his fork in, but the eggs are too hard, and he cries. Peter says he'll make more eggs, and Joshua calms down. Joshua points out during the meal that I forgot to put the cap on the salad dressing. I don't do things right sometimes, I say. Peter and I talk, the children vying for my attention, me taking Joshua's hand whenever I can, gazing into his blue eyes like his mother's, and at his perfect 20 teeth. He had 4 when I last saw him. After dinner, Peter sends them to put on pajamas, but Joshua wanders lost across the floor. I want someone to help me. May I ask? He says yes. He, Abby, and I go up the stairs. I see Abby's room. What a beautiful room, I tell her, remembering that Rachel got after her about her messy room. How neat it is! Neater than any room in my house. She shows me her school certificate on the wall, a poster that she likes. 2 large photos of Rachel are on her bookshelf. Joshua reaches for them. Mommy, I want her. I want Mommy. I say, I know you do. Abby gets her pajamas out, and Joshua and I go to his room. Joshua wants to show me his things. He zooms, flashing trucks across the floor. I get him to the dresser where he pulls open a drawer and leans on it. The dresser tips dangerously, and I frighten him by exclaiming and pushing against the dresser. This child, a baby still in some ways, is used to being frightened by catastrophe. No, not used to it, simply ready for one at any time. I try to soften the alarm that I caused in him. He selects pajamas, and we go downstairs to put them on. He shows me a picture on the stairs of Linda, his father's girlfriend, who is living here now, but still at work. They say they're in love, he tells me. What do you think, I ask. I say they're not. If they were, I would have come out of Linda's tummy. Then he leads me triumphantly to Linda herself, who has just come home, and I say how nice it is to meet her. I begin to change him, but he wants her to do it. Abby has come back downstairs in her pajamas. I stand next to Linda at the counter. I remember when Rachel chose the color for it, a warm cinnamon, and reach an arm around her shoulder. Abby makes a place for herself in the middle, the sides of her body touching us both. Bedtime. Abby and I have trouble, parting. I ask to go upstairs with her. I sit on her bed and we talk about bedtimes and dreams. She mentions nightmares and how she will wake Linda or her father. How she hates the bad dreams when they seem really real at night. We part again. I go to Joshua's room. I say his bed is very cozy. I would like to be an egg, inside an egg, he tells me. Wouldn't that be great, I answer, all cozy and warm and safe. What do chickens think when they're in a shell, he wonders. They don't think like us, I say. They don't worry about anything. But the egg would crack and break, Joshua says. Not if it had a strong shell, I reply. If the heavy rain and snow came, it would crack, he says. No, it's very strong. Nothing would crack. You'd be safe and warm and cozy in it. Would you be in it too? Wouldn't that be fun? We'd visit each other. I want to visit you at your house. I want you to. He tells me how the bed used to be in a different place in his room. That's when you didn't know me. I'm glad I know you now, I say, and I will keep knowing you. I kiss him goodnight, and on my way downstairs, I hear a sound from Abby's room and go in. She sits up suddenly, and I see she's crying. I told my daddy I know what it is about you. You are like my mommy, and she throws her arms around me. I cry a little too and hold her. I feel as if I am Rachel's arms. I miss your mommy too, I say. You are half my mommy. You are 2/3 my mommy, I think, she sobs. I say, I loved your mommy very much, and I love you very much. You are like a godchild to me, a special child for me to care for. Your mom specially asked me to keep an eye on you. And we can see each other and be friends, and different kinds of friends as you get older and talk, and I can tell you all about your mother and what she was like. Why do people have to die? Abby asks me, especially people you love? I don't know. We just feel sad, and then that feeling goes away for a while, and we feel happy again. And even though your mom can't come back, There are lots of other people for you to love. None of them are her or can be her, but you can love them and they can love you. You mean I have a happy part and a sad part? Abby asks. Like the top half of me is happy and the bottom part is sad? And I could just cut off the sad part? We all have all those parts, I said, and all of them are in you and in me too. We rock and hug. I tell her how happy Rachel was with her and how she used to bring her to my house and nurse her, about my having Lucy and Rachel visiting me after she was born and deciding to have Joshua. Do you feel better now? I ask. Uh-huh. You can go downstairs now if you want. I can go to sleep. I will see you again, Abby, I say.